Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 90th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Rifat Zedi, originally from the foothills of Lahore, Pakistan. A very geographically diverse country located between India, Iran, Afghanistan, and China. He, his wife, and two young children moved to Maine in 2002 after living both at home and abroad while he studied and trained to become an orthopedic surgeon. He's been living, worshiping, working as a surgeon at Miles Memorial Hospital, raising children, and cooking up famous Pakistani dishes at home in Newcastle, Maine, for the last 14 years. Thank you so much for coming down to Portland this morning and being on New Mainers Speak.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm happy to be here, Kate.
Well, it's lovely to have you. And thank you very much for the delicious food you brought me for my...
I hope you enjoy it.
I can't imagine I wouldn't. So you grew up in an interesting time in Pakistani history, in a then newly formed independent nation for Muslims, which was feeling the, what you called, euphoria of patriotism. What can you tell listeners about your childhood in Lahore that would help to paint a picture about the way life was then for you and your family at the time?
Kate, life was very good in Pakistan up till the 1980 era. We grew up, and like any other children, and we were teenagers, we used to hang out, and there was no problem, there was no major issues, there was some petty crime, just like anywhere else, but, you know, there was absolutely, we never actually thought about not going out or not doing things, and not, you know, life was just normal, just like here. But in 79, when Russia walked into Afghanistan, that's where the things changed. Life changed drastically after that. And we can talk about that more because what happened was that these 3.5 million immigrants started coming into Pakistan, and all this money which was pumped into this war against Soviets, it started basically started pumping money, and all these guns and this stuff, which should not be there in the hands of ordinary people, it started pouring into Pakistan, and it became from a very peaceful, quiet country to a very vicious, what we hear in the news these days.
Interesting. Not a perspective I understood before. Thanks.
Yes, people don't actually talk about the Soviet walking in, because that was the, for me, that was the initiation of all this, but we have divorced all this information from what is happening now.
Yeah.
And we just forget about it. But I think Soviets have to be blamed for this thing.
And they were walking into Afghanistan, which is your next door neighbor.
That's right.
Were they also coming into Pakistan?
I don't know. I believe that their interest was to access warm waters of the Arabian Sea, and that was their, Pakistan was going to be their next target. And it's a very difficult situation to explain to somebody, because China is into this market doing the same thing, because they have access to the warm water through the Pakistani docks. And a lot of neighbors don't like that, I believe. I'm not really a politician to understand all the intricacies of this phenomenon, but I think that's what it is.
Geography.
Geography and geopolitical stuff.
Yeah. And the weather and your family setting, what did that look like?
Pakistan is actually, on the south, we have sandy beaches. Pakistan is the size of Texas and Oklahoma put together. And it's basically a plateau, 2,000, 2,500 feet, and then up to Islamabad. And from if you stand in Islamabad, you can actually see the mountains, the Himalayas, and the Himalayas in the north and the Hindu Kush in the west. They meet in Pakistan. And this is where the passes are, where the famous Khyber Pass, that's where everybody entered India, or the Indian subcontinent then, walked in through Khyber Pass, because there was no other access. Either it was the sea or it was the Khyber Pass. And if you stand in Islamabad looking north, you can just see this mountain starting. And if you travel 25 miles, you are at 10,000 feet elevation. And it snows. It actually snowed last week there.
Right. So quite a diverse...
It is. So from golden sandy beaches to, K2 Mountain, which is in the northernmost part of Pakistan, it's 28,500 some feet.
Yeah, most people have heard of K2.
Yes, and mm-hmm. 10 of the, I think 6 of the 10 tallest mountains are in Pakistan.
Really, in the world?
In the world, yes.
Wow.
People don't know about that.
I didn't and realize. About, makes sense, though.
And there are about 20 other mountains which have never been conquered. They are just there because they are so desolate and barren country. They are not really accessible. They are not in that category, but they are still 20,000 or 15 to 20,000 feet high.
Hmm. And so you have 4 siblings?
Yes, I'm the youngest of 5. 3 brothers, senior to me, and 1 sister. And I'm the baby of the family.
I see. And you all ended up going far flung all over the globe, didn't you?
We did. At one time, we were in 5 different countries, in 4 different continents, doing different things. So that was quite interesting.
Hmm. Guns in unwanted places cause a lot of people to move on.
That's right. You see, if Pakistan is a beautiful country, weather-wise and everything else-wise, it's just that in the 80s, when things started to become worse, the economy economy basically tanked down, and a lot of people for greener pastures went away. Every 17th Pakistani is living outside of Pakistan.
Wow. We'll be talking a little bit more about that in the later half of the show. If you could go back in time and go back to your childhood home, what food or dish might you most like to go sit down and eat with your family?
You know what? I would love to actually sit with my family. It doesn't matter what I have. And I would like to have my parents and my children sit on the same table at the same time and enjoy some time together.
And that's something I think a lot of people live in extended families might take for granted.
That's right. People who live like in Maine, people, it's a very stable population, and most of the families around them. It's very difficult for them to understand this concept, because for us, everything is through the social media. So our interaction is mostly on social media.
Yeah, at an eye table.
Eye table, yes.
E table.
The social media table.
Is there someone in your family who was the best cook that you'd like to be able to cook like?
You know, I was never interested in cooking or eating. I would just eat for the sake of eating. Till I moved to England. And they have the most horrible food in England. I'm sorry to say this. They're good people. I have many good friends. But English are the most horrible cooks. One, I'm allergic to a lot of things. I don't eat pork. And I'm allergic to seafood. So if you go and eat in England, if you order a salad, there will be tuna or bacon bits on it.
And prawns.
So it's like, really, I ordered a vegetarian, but they would just not understand this concept. So when I was working in the National Health Service there, and I had to eat lunchtime food there, you could kind of get by, but I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, I cannot have this food twice. So I started cooking myself, and it was just by trial and error, mostly. Trial and error. So it took me a long time to figure out things.
But reinventing Pakistani cooking.
Reinventing and hybridizing stuff. And now I'm at a stage where I'm a little more, cavalier about things, and I can figure out those things myself.
Yeah. So. And we have a lot of resources with our internet access too,
absolutely,
don't we? You're a citizen of the United States now and still a practicing Muslim, even in rural Maine. You're able to practice your faith and eat halal foods. How have you and your wife managed to do that so successfully all these years without a mosque or a Muslim community around you?
See, one thing people don't know about Islam is that in Islam, you can practice your religion. You do not need a cleric to practice your religion. You can be totally independent, and that's what we have been doing. You don't need a mosque as such. It's good for a Friday prayer, or if you want to pray five times a day in the mosque, but you can still manage all that at home. I do my five prayers every day. I do my fasting once a year, and I do my zakat every year, and I try to do all that stuff. And Portland now has a lot of Muslim community, and we can get halal meat here, the Indian grocery store here. But when I moved here, there was none of that available, and the nearest place was Boston. So we would make a trip to Boston with the coolers in the car and bring home halal meat. But one of the most important things that we figured out living here was that in winters that was not possible. So we started looking online, and we found halal butchers online, and they will send you the meat, the halal meat, very nicely prepared, everything beautifully done. And it gets to your house in 2 or 3 days' time, and it's there. Beautiful, fresh.
UPS.
UPS, yes. The brown truck is our friend here.
I love it. You never know what people are having dropped off from UPS.
Absolutely.
And Facebook keeps people who are far flung like you and your family connected in ways it would have been hard to imagine when we were kids. And is it true that people call you from Pakistan to ask you for your recipes?
It's not just that. I mean, I get asked, you know, the recipe. You know, previously, I used to be, people would get free medical advice. Now they want free cooking advice.
As you perfected some of your dishes.
That's right.
That's people why now, they weren't calling
my
at first.
My friends and family, now they know that I cook. So they ask me a lot of questions. So, you know, I get questions from, you know, so many places. Can't keep a tab on. You know, the other day my brother called me and said, you remember my mother used to make those things? And how do you make that? So I was in the middle of seeing patients, so I just stepped out of the office and I told him the recipe, and I came back.
I love that. And then do you Skype with your brothers and sisters?
Well, what? This is not an advertisement, but iPhones are so beautiful. They work for our family because we have all converted to it, and FaceTime is a free app which you can just contact anybody anywhere at any time, and it's just like having a face-to-face conversation, and that has kept the family together. And we still talk to each other once or twice a week, and you know, if you have a question, we'll just call. Like I just called my sister just recently, you know, just before I came in for the interview, and I asked him something, and I asked her something, and you know, that conversation as if it was just face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. And do you speak in Urdu?
We do, yes. Yeah. We do. Uh-huh. So that's our mother tongue.
Do you all speak English as well?
We all speak English. My wife, her mother tongue is different, so we don't have the same mother tongue. So she is Pashtun, and my mother tongue is Urdu. So we don't speak the same language, so to speak.
At home.
At home.
Yeah. Can I ask you how you feel about Donald Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric we're hearing a lot about these days, and what that's like for you and your family to hear politicians talking about Muslims?
That's a very interesting question. A few years ago, I took my kids to Washington, D.C., and we were at the Jefferson Memorial. And I, at that time, thought that if people just followed what was written on the memorial, this world would be a better place. You know, the founding fathers of this country, they were very intelligent people. Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and these people, they figured these things out, and they made life good for us. I mean, this, the Declaration of Independence, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and all men are equal. You can practice religion or no religion. Okay, what Mr. Trump is saying, although he's a very successful businessman, and I believe he has a lot of following in the Republican Party, but there is no place for fascism. in this country. And United States has lost so many good men and women fighting fascism. It's coming here, unfortunately. I hope he does not get elected, but if he does, we will accept this because this is democracy and this is what happens in democracy. If the majority says that he's going to be the president, fine. But he's going to be that curveball that is thrown at the park at you. But I think it will be a home run for Muslims eventually. Not today, not tomorrow, next in the 4 years. But eventually, we will come out looking good because this will be a home run for us. Because people will realize that what he's saying is not really true.
Hmm. That's an interesting perspective. Thank you. You're listening to WMPG. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Rifat Zaidi. He's an orthopedic surgeon, originally from Lahore, Pakistan, working in Damariscotta, Maine at Miles Memorial Hospital. Rifat, it is not an easy road to become a surgeon, especially one with your specialty, taking years of study, and in your case, being apart from your family. Are you glad now that you decided to become a surgeon? And yeah, can you tell us a little bit about your work?
I love what I do. I was always a hands-on kid, and I always had a good ear to listen to people and their problems, and that's what I do for a living, because people come to you with problems. It's an interesting job because you have to sit there trying to get an answer from what they tell you, and I really enjoy. I see 25, 30 people every day, and it's very interesting to try to figure out and help people. As a surgeon, I mean, there are many different types of surgeries or surgical specialties. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and to me, the result is visible the next day. You know, if I see somebody, like we have been seeing a lot of people falling on black eyes these days, you see them, you operate on them, the next day they stand up, and then you know, we have a very short-term relationship with them because they are done healing 2, 3, 4, 6 months down the road. And it's very gratifying, unlike some other branches of medicine, because it's a slow process. But we have a quick, you know, turnover. So it's very interesting. And you have to have a kind of a 3D perspective of everything, because when you're fixing a bone or replacing something, you know, you have to have your mental capability and your physical capability at full, trying to figure out, solve a problem. And operating on broken bones can be quite challenging because, you know, you never know what you're going to find in there. And you have to be ready. And that's a challenge that we all enjoy, all orthopedic surgeons. I think it's in us, basically. It's, you know, somebody has to do it. And we enjoy doing what we do.
Yes, I think like all professions, certain people are attracted to that kind of profession.
Absolutely. And if I have another chance, I'll do the same thing again.
You would do it all over
again. Yes, absolutely.
I love that. And surgeons are uniquely qualified to do some amazing volunteer work as well. I know you and your wife, also a doctor, flew over to Pakistan after a devastating earthquake in 2005 and did numerous surgeries for people in need. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about your recent project, the girls' school you helped support in the Punjab region of Pakistan.
So I am from Rawalpindi Medical College, and we have an overseas foundation. We are all, the physicians are basically currently practicing in the United States, and now we have expanded that. So in 2005, when I was going for the earthquake relief work, these people unofficially, you know, we made this foundation in 2005, and they funded me, and I raised a lot of money from Mid-Coast, including, and I would like to thank the people of Damariscotta and Newcastle for raising money for me, so that I went there 3 times, and we did over 100 surgeries, and we consulted on a lot of people. And we had 6 people from here, 3 physicians and 3 nurses who went with us so many different times. And at that stage, I was thinking of making a surgery center in Pakistan for the poor. But then we had these floods in Pakistan. 20-25% of the area of Pakistan was underwater from Indus, overflowing. So we started making a village, and we built 320 homes and two girls' schools in the most remote area of Punjab, which is as far away from Islamabad as you can get.
And a poor region, too.
It's an extremely poor region. And so we made two girls' schools because there were no girls' schools in that area. And one school has been taken over by another organization, and they are running it. And I'm in charge. I'm the project director of one of the schools. We have about 110 girls, and they've gone up to class four, basically. And we raise money for it. Our budget is basically almost $1,000 to $1,200 per month for that school, and 110 girls are getting educated. Now, I used to think that helping people medically was more important, but now I think that education is the key. It's the most important single thing that you can do to improve the quality of people's lives here and overseas. Whatever is happening politically in the world with all this ISIS and all that, this is, I think, related to bad education or biased education. Whether it's happening in this country or anywhere else, it should be stopped. Biased education has no role to play anywhere on this globe. And I think everybody should have an open education. And then this world will be a better place, I think. So what I'm doing for this is I'm trying to raise money, because it's extremely difficult to raise money for charity. I've written a book. Hopefully this will be in publication and available soon. And all the proceeds from that book will go to this Remkoff school. I have an exhibition of my photography. I also do a little bit on the side, although it's not professionally. I'm not really that good a photographer, but still. So there is going to be an exhibition in Damariscotta in November, and hopefully the money that I will raise from there will go to the school. This weekend, actually, our board of directors meeting was in Florida, and I missed that for this interview today.
I'm so glad you could be here. That's a very lovely of you to be here instead of that. You've been working on this for how many years?
So this school is fourth year into this school since the classes started. We built that project for another year. So it was almost 2009 when the idea came up. And I actually, Lincoln Academy from Newcastle. So these kids actually raised money for some homes there. So I'm very glad that they did, and I'm very thankful to all of them. So
makes us all connected on this little planet.
Absolutely.
If we hear about all the tragedies going on all over the world, I think we can get very disillusioned and not know even where to start. But you offer people a place to start.
Well, it's a drop in the ocean, and every drop counts in the end. So if we all did a little bit of something to the people around us, that what we can do to help people maintain a better life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Not such a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
What is your hope for this girls' school? Do you hope to fund it through 8th grade or 12th grade, or how will that look if it all works perfectly?
Yesterday we had this meeting. As I said, I missed that, but I was on telephone with them, and we decided that we are going to take it to 8th grade, but we need a lot of funding, so we don't know where that's going to come. If you have anybody who is interested, please direct us in our direction, and we'll be happy to accept some donations. And, you know, because all the donations go directly for helping people, it does not go into the overheads. We travel on
your own money.
Yes.
And then you go. And there's no office either, right?
There is no office. There's no office staff. We are all professionals. We are all physicians. And we do it on our side. And we do whatever we can.
If curious listeners want to learn more, it's rmcof.com. I will link to that on my website and on our Facebook page after this interview if you want to look into that more. And so the book that you're making isn't just a book. It's a cookbook.
It's a cookbook. That's right. See, I started.
Everybody wants your recipes.
That's right. So I started thinking that my kids grew up here. They like Pakistani food, and there is no resource for them. So I started writing for them, and people like them. You know, people, expatriates who are living here, young technocrats who are leaving Pakistan, they had never had any experience with cooking. So I thought, keeping them in mind, there is a place for this book, and I'm sure it will be, it will sell a few, editions, hopefully. And so it's not for it's not for making money. It's for raising money for this school. And hopefully people will enjoy these recipes for a long time. If anybody is interested, this will be available soon. Hopefully, I'm working on it.
And if you keep me posted as it gets published and you know where it is for sale, let me know and I'll put that up on our Facebook page too.
Great. Thank you.
Rifat, since you were a child, you wanted to contribute to the well-being of people of Pakistan. And now, though not in the way you had originally imagined, you're able to do that in some very significant ways, as well as serving the people of Maine. Your actions make it feel like the world's a small place indeed. And thank you so much for being willing to come on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I had a wonderful time.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Rifat Zaidi. We will close today's program with a song he's chosen for us. Rifat, what do you want to tell listeners about this song? Why did you pick this one?
This is called Jugni, which is a folk Punjabi song, and it has a Sufi twist to it. And this is a remix remixed in Pakistan with a modern, this is a phenomenon called Coke Studio. It's Coca-Cola company has spent a lot of money making the studio for audio and video recordings, and they get people from Pakistan, the musicians, and give them opportunity. Arif Lohar is a very famous singer, and I think this music you will all like, because this is music to dance to, and it's very thrilling.
Anything that 22 million people like,
absolutely,
could be quite popular. Here you go. Thanks.
See ya.